Blue Room, Radio City Talk.
Okay, you listen to the Blue Room on, well, it's not on Radio City Talk anymore. You listen to the Blue Room podcast, the first one of its kind in terms of being exclusively as a podcast. I'm Dave Downey, Matt Jones, Dave Bennett are with me. For those of you who subscribe exclusively to hear Ped's dulcet tones, don't worry, he's about somewhere. I believe it's his birthday today, so he won't be joining us today. He's off doing something far more important, probably Christmas shopping with the missus or walking his dog, because he loves to do them sort of things. Slightly new format, so if you have tuned into Radio City Talk, hoping to hear us at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday, that won't be the case anymore. You will still hear the Blue Room in a different format. It'll be on Thursday mornings, and it'll be more of a best bits of the show, if you can find any. And what it also means is, the benefits of it are, we can record for as long as we like, there's no adverts. So for those of you who download the podcast anyway, it's pretty much exactly the same, but you'll probably get a lot more of us, because there's a lot more issues to talk about than we can normally squeeze into 45 minutes on the radio. There's also an alternative way to listen to us. You can go to Audio Boom. We'll put all of these links up on each of our individual Twitter pages and the Blue Room EFC one as well. And I think we're sorting something out with Facebook as well. The radio station will still be involved with that sort of thing as well. So they'll be plugging it. So chances are, I mean, you've got to be actually deliberately not looking for us to not see that we're actually still about. So that's pretty much it. And the show will be available because I'm teaching everyone in the room and Ped how to upload the show. So we guarantee it'll be out by 6 o'clock every single Tuesday on the podcast on iTunes and both on Audio Boom as well. So there's literally much better ways to listen to us than there ever has been before. So to start with the show, Crystal Palace we're going to get into first of all. Dave Bennett, I was actually watching the game, and it struck me as a really good game of football. I thought it was, even though we drew the match, there was a lot of things that I thought we did really well. I struggled to find any real negatives other than the fact we maybe weren't as clinical enough. Maybe Kone a little bit probably could have been taken off. Morales, get him on some point, but overall, I don't think you can complain about the performance. That was Everton in form last night, other than the fact we didn't win the game.
Yeah, and it's mad to think, isn't it, that when you're walking out, the standards that some of the fans set on this team and this manager. I heard someone actually calling for the manager's head walking out. It blew my mind, really. But because it was a really good performance, and on another night, we win that game 4-1.
Yeah.
And that's not just counting the ones that we've hit the post and the bar three times. There was other times we've created chances and we've been unlucky. And saying that, Palace had a few chances themselves in what was a really good game of football. But there was no two ways about it. I thought we deserved the 3 points on the night. And again, it's refreshing to see how well our attacking players are playing at the moment and how dangerous they are, albeit Palace rode the luck and got out of there with a point. It's not like a point where we've had them in other seasons. Like last season in particular, Martin, there's a lot of home draws when you walk away and it was a draw, but it was never going to be a win. Know what I mean? It was the fact that Lukaku was very isolated up front. Barkley was injured for the start of the season. Deulofeu wasn't there. Kone hadn't had the resurgence that he's had and was injured himself. And now we've got good partnerships. Not just have we got Lukaku linking up with Barkley like he was two seasons ago. Lukaku's linking up really well with Deulofeu, and he's linking up with Kone. Mm. And they're linking up in different ways, each one of them. Three players behind Lukaku each bring a different part of his game out. And it's really exciting how many chances we can create in a game now. And albeit we came away with a point and it was disappointing, I wasn't too downhearted, because I was thinking the chances were there, and on another night, if we continue playing this way and keep these players together, we are going to win more games than we lose or draw.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. You put it down to bad luck. I mean, you look at a couple of strikes from Lukaku there, they're both at the woodwork, and they're wonder strikes. And you know, a few centimetres here or there and you're talking about a hat-trick for them. And you know, you're raving even more than a lot of people are about him already. We'll get on to him in a little bit. It's 50 and 100, isn't it, for him? Absolutely perfect record. And I think he's rammed the £28 million price tag down a lot of people's throats lately. Matt, Dave spoke there. I mean, we know we've got a divided fan base at the best of times, given, you know, the the stuff that goes on off the pitch and AGMs and grab moves and all that sort of thing. That really sets us up. And I think it also plays a big part in how we view the team as well, how divided that is, how we look at the football team as well. And I've seen Dave's tweets about some of the people that were around him saying, like he said before, wanting Martinez's head and things like that. But standards have gone through the roof indeed, haven't they? With you know, you see articles in the paper saying the Fab Four, people are calling them, being valued at nearly £200 million, stuff like that. People are getting a little bit carried away.
The thing that makes me laugh is when you get people saying, another manager would do a better job with these young players, and you think the only reason we've got these young players in the first place is because of Roberto and because of his pulling power on the transfer market. We wouldn't have got Lukaku if it wasn't for him. We definitely wouldn't have got Gerard Deulofeu if it wasn't for him. John Stones and Ross Barkley probably wouldn't have been quite as prominent in the first team if it wasn't for him. So he's had a key role to play in getting these young players in, striking up these relationships that Dave's mentioned there, and getting them into proper Premier League players. But I think what a lot of people will have to accept is obviously we all strive for perfection. We all want to see us defending well, attacking well, playing well in midfield. But when you've got a team which is so rife full of young players, there are going to be times when frailties do manifest. And that happened in the second half. We were coming forward really well, putting them under a lot of pressure. But we were a little naive on the break at times. We did switch off for the set piece, but if you look at how we were this time last season when we were playing stagnant football, we were passing it side to side, playing ourselves into trouble. And I came away from that game last night and I was just thinking how much I enjoyed the performance from the team. It was a performance of intensity. There was a lot of balance in the attacking positions. We've got one of the best young strikers in European football at the moment. That is absolute pomp. Bullying defenders, scoring goals. And I can't... All right, we still lack that killer instinct, but that will come eventually if these players stay together. And I said that after the game last night, we just need to ensure that we keep these players together, that they learn from the mistakes together and grow as a group. And then if that killer instinct does come, it could come this year in the semi-final. Yeah. We're in the semi-final of a cup, so that could come this year, but it will come eventually. We keep them together, and there's a lot to be excited about, I think.
The perception of Martinez is a funny one, Dave, isn't it? Because, you know, like Matt just mentioned there, obviously football fans are fickle and they've got very short memories at times. I mean, you look at, Matt's mentioned Deulofeu there, we wouldn't have got him anywhere near him under Moyes or probably a host of other managers. But you look at Barkley as well, his emergence and the faith he's shown in him over the years. You sort of do have to, you know, doff your cap to him at times when he does like that. But I just want to go back to what he said in the aftermath of Bournemouth, and I was having kittens at the time when he said it, when he said it's about the performance and not the results. But you sort of get the angle at which he's getting at. I don't think he wants you to take that at face value. I think it's a form of him simply saying, well, when these lads click, you're going to get both, really. And that's ultimately what we saw last night when they click, but for the sake of a width of a post or the width of a crossbar, we'd have gone and annihilated Crystal Palace, who were one of the best away sides in the Premier League.
Yeah, and I mean, at Bournemouth, you're speaking, there was 2 points dropped as well. And if you add that with the 2 points dropped last night and you have them 4 points, the league table looks a lot different, and it's frustrating in that aspect. But again, the Bournemouth performance, Lukaku was his toenail being an inch longer from making it 3-0, and then it would have been an easy, comfortable win. We've let them back in it cheaply and we've ended up dropping points. But bigger picture, we're scoring goals freely, and it's not just one player, we're sharing it around the team. And you are right, we do need to tighten up at the back. We've still got Jaggy Elka to come back, and obviously I just think McCarthy's such a big miss. That's where it all started going wrong at Bournemouth when he came off the pitch. But it's not like there's no light at the end of the tunnel where you don't suspect that we can close up shop and become stronger at the back. I mean, it's going to be interesting over the coming weeks and months how Robles is going to obviously still play in the cup competitions. We've got a double semi-final there. If we win in the semi-final and we keep progressing in the FA Cup, a similar thing happened at Wigan where they were doing well in the FA Cup and Robles ended up keeping his place in the league team as well off Al Habsi. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out in the new year, because I think we could end up with a new number one, and I think if that does end up being the case, we'd end up with a more solid back footing for all the columns from certain journalists locally saying that the Howard criticism's too soon. I think we all do realise it is time. Even last night in what was a better performance from him, he's still probably culpable for the goal we've conceded. And that's the main concern, because I think last night we were always going to score a goal eventually. We were playing too good not to score a goal, but it's like how cheaply we can be conceded on, you know, just like that. And then by the time you do get the goal, it only counts for a point. That last night was a game where I think me and Matt spoke off air, just James McCarthy being on the pitch putting out fires, I think would have potentially been the difference. And in terms of how we defended, even though we conceded the goal from a set play, I just think, like, obviously we conceded the corner from a counter attack, but I've gone round the bases. But I think once you get Jagielka, McCarthy and potentially Joel Robles in goal, I think that sets us on a better defensive footing, and the way we're scoring goals at the minute, the sky's the limit at that end of the pitch.
Got Leighton Baines to come back in as well. You know, he came on a bit last night, and immediately, even though he wasn't fully fit, he made a few errors at the back. He gives us that balance going forward, and as well as Galloway's done, good defender, athletic, gets up and down the line quite well. When he gets into those areas, there were a couple of times last night where when he picked the ball up, advanced on the left flank, and he just didn't seem to know what to do with it quite well enough. But if you get Baines back in, there's an over-experienced player, Jagielka, an over-experienced player, and then all of a sudden, we all see these young players in the side and how well they're performing and taking on responsibility. But if you get a better blend then of experienced players to go with them, and we're going to go places. And this time last season, I was looking at the squad, and you know, we had players like Alcaraz in there, Samuel Eto'o, who were a bit past the best, and well past the best in both the cases, really. And you're thinking, where are we going to go from here? And now you look at the team and you think, you can't help but be excited, because these are players that are only going to get better. They've got a cup competition to look forward to, and that should invigorate everybody. Not be the opposite. We shouldn't be questioning the manager. We shouldn't be questioning these players. We should be accepting the fact that they are going to make mistakes. Yeah. They are going to learn from them, and they will ultimately get better.
Martinez's in-game management's been under scrutiny, I think. Well, it's been that way for a long time. I think probably the last 18 months he's, you know, a lot of people have had issues with how he's making substitutions or not in many cases. And last night was no different. And I was sort of drawn to the fact that De La Feu played full 90, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I think that's a big turning point or a big statement from Martinez, because we weren't winning the game. It wasn't, I don't think, at any point crying out for something different, other than perhaps maybe Morales, which we'll get onto in a bit. But the fact that he's shown that faith with De La Feu, where that could have easily been a game, particularly in his first year, where when he's seen he's probably going to have a frustrating night, which he did have. Ultimately, he did have a frustrating night, even though I thought he was still exceptional at times. He still persisted with him and kept that faith with him, and obviously that's a reward for how well he's done in recent games. But it shows that maturity that he's starting to develop in his game. The fact that his manager, and obviously us as fans as well, have got that faith in the fact that he's a full 90-minute player now. He's not a lad who you just throw on off the bench. And that emergence has happened rapidly, Matt, hasn't it, over the last probably, what, two, three months?
Yeah, you can see the improvements, can't you, before your eyes in his game. His crossing's improved, his decision making's getting better, and what I liked last night about his game was that even though at times in the first half especially things didn't come off for him, his crosses went out of play, he was getting tackled by the fullback, but a lot of wingers in that situation would be dissuaded and they'd get the ball, they'd look backwards and play back into midfield, but he just kept on going at it, kept on taking the fullback on, kept putting crosses in the box, kept keeping his discipline and hanging out on that right hand side, and he eventually got his reward. And you mentioned there about leaving him on the pitch for the full 90 minutes. We've seen it as early as this season, the Derby game, didn't he? He brought him off in that match.
Yeah.
And he was having a poor game that day, and a lot of people know wanted him to stay on in that game because he has got that moment of magic. Mm. But before then, he hadn't really produced it on a consistent basis, whereas now you look at him, he's making goals almost every week from Lukaku at the moment. So you've got to leave him on just because he can conjure up that moment.
Well, I think it could be a watershed moment, the Palace game, because not just the Derby, he does tend to be, if they are making a sub, he is often one of the ones dragged off. Albeit late in games, it's getting later and later and later, and now he has finally completed the game. But I totally agree. You need to keep him on the pitch because he's just a constant threat. He's permanently a threat, and he has fullbacks so terrified. Like Suarez, who did an okay job on him last night, but he did keep backing off on him, and he kept letting him in, get just inside the penalty area. And when you've just got that constant threat, when you're trying to break a team down, it you need to keep him on the pitch, especially in a game like last night where you're just knocking and knocking on the door. And that's why I just couldn't get... Like the people are just screaming for a sub's sake. It was getting frustrating, yeah. But Everton were peppering the goal, and I heard people saying, "Take De La Feo off, he's knackered." But even though you could see he was blowing after he'd gone on a, he was blowing after he'd just been on a lung busting run. Know what I mean? But then, like 10-20 seconds later, he'd be asking for the ball again, and he, as Matt said, he maintains his discipline. He stays out there. He keeps giving you the whiff. So he had to stay on. Some people inexplicably saying take Barkley off. Barkley was having a good game. The Kone one, if anyone was going to come off, the only two changes I could have maybe seen was maybe, yeah, Kone for Morales. But we had such momentum in the game. Even Palace scoring didn't disrupt that. We had the momentum before they scored and we continued the momentum after. It just seemed like a matter of time before we were going to equalise, which we did. And I just thought that we were going to get another one after we'd scored. And obviously there was a case for maybe making a substitution, but there was you can totally see the rationale in not upsetting what was going on. And that's what I just didn't get in people screaming bloody murder for a change when there was no necessity for the having to definitely be one. But the Bournemouth one, Martinez's in-game management that day has to be questioned. And ultimately, people said it was like the fans coming on the pitch that cost us. It was bringing Gibson on because it's been said by even Bournemouth players that once Barkley scored, he was going to blow up. But once Martinez makes the substitution, I think there was 8 seconds left on the clock when Barkley scored. Once Martinez makes the substitution, that gives the added 30 seconds at least, and then and normally they allow a one attack to see if a team's on an attack, they'll normally let them see that out, and that's ultimately where the goal came from. So that was a day where you could you could question what Martinez did, but a few things backfired on him. But what manager does get it right every single week? As long as he's getting it right more times than he's getting it wrong, and his in-game management in his first season, when everyone thought the sun shone out of his backside, it was actually really good that year. He was affecting games with the changes he was making. So it's not like he's got a terrible track record in in-game management. I think last season it wasn't as good as his first season, but last season he didn't really have the options from the bench, did he? That's the good thing with what Everton have got going on this season. It's like they've got that good first 11, but if one of the centre-halves goes down injured, Stones or Jagielka, you have Mori coming in as the third centre-half. He's better than what we had in Distan last year. If one of the three players behind Lukaku come out, it's not the fact you're bringing in a McGeady or an Osman, you're bringing in a Morales, know what I mean? So he has better options from the bench this season. So I think you'll see him, you should see him using it better, especially as the games start coming thick and fast. And when we do rotate, it's not a case of we're all of a sudden severely under strength. There can be like for likes. It's like if Baines gets back in the team, we know if he drops out, Galloway's a good replacement to come back in for him. So there are options. If McCarthy comes back in, Cleverley's there, and Cleverley's versatile and can play positions. So it is promising in terms of a squad perspective as well.
No, I completely agree with that. That's what I wanted to get onto with the Morales debate, really, Matt. You know, you look at a lot of people saying, well, you know, he's obviously fell out with the manager, or you know, he's not happy, he's sulking. I mean, you seen what his attitude was like at the end of the Butter game. It wasn't great. I think he's that type of mercurial character, though, to be fair to him. And who wouldn't be frustrated at the moment being left out of a squad when they're not playing well is one thing, but when they are playing well and you're not part of it, that must be equally as frustrating as well. The thing that Dave mentioned there, and the thing that sort of, I think there won't be an ultimate conclusion to the Morales situation in terms of him not getting a game, is the fact that he mentioned the squad there, and it's going to be needed. There's, without a shadow of a doubt, these lads are all going to be needed, because you look at how thick and fast the games are coming. We've got an extra two built in for January. I think we play Man City three times on the bounce, three out of the four games. The squad's going to need to be utilised. The fact now we're in a situation where injuries haven't taken hold as they normally do for us at some point, the fact that these lads are able, it's a situation that's alien to us, I think, the fact that we've got such quality on the bench. One, because, you know, we've actually got the depth there, and two, the injuries haven't taken hold and we're having to rely on these lads already. I think it's an excellent sign, and one that probably makes you jump the gun a little bit when you think of, well, he's not getting a game, so he's obviously off in January.
Well, the thing with Morales, I know he came on against Villa and he did okay, didn't he, for 20 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever he's on the pitch for, but there's a difference between bringing him on in a game like that when you're 4-0 up, you're cruising, the opposition have completely given up in the game, and bringing him on in a match like that last night, which is in the balance, because I just think back to that Swansea game when he brought him on for the last five minutes of the match, and he ran around like a lunatic. He gave away stupid free kicks, got himself sent off. And you just think, if you can't be trusted to run around in a game for 5 minutes at the end of the match, how can you be trusted to come on and do something in this sort of game?
Is it a trust issue then? You see why he's not.
I think I don't trust him. Do you trust him?
I don't trust him, but
he's got that in his game, hasn't he?
I know his quality, the thing that's the thing that sort of frightens me, but
if he was so, I just think if he was so worried about getting chances in the team, he would have come on for that Swansea game and think, right, I'm going to run around for 5 minutes here and then I'll get me chance then in midweek, because we had the Carling Cup game that week. But instead, he acted petulantly, got himself sent off, and then he missed his chance to make an impression then. Mm. And Delafeu's coming to the team. It was actually after that Swansea game, Delafeu, he played the next game against West Brom, and he's not looked back since. He took his opportunity, and he's been absolutely brilliant. And players like Naismith came to the team early in the season, took his chance, got a hat-trick. Kone came into the team, scored a hat-trick. He's not really been off the side since. So I think the opportunities would have been there for him if he hadn't acted so petulantly. And I can see why the manager doesn't trust him, because he's got history for it.
Do you see a way back for him, Dave Morales? Because I know I'm saying, it might sound a little bit contradictory, saying that I'm personally not worried about the situation because I think our squad will be needed at some point, and I think he will get his chance. But, you know, there's a European Championships coming up in the summer. You've seen a different side to him since that stupid penalty fiasco last year with West Brom. I'm not saying that he's not a team player, but he looked like he was for himself at the end of that Middlesbrough game, didn't he? And do you see a way back for him with Everton?
There's always a way back in football. So you don't know what's around the corner. I mean, in the next game, Delafeu could get injured. He start and then Morales comes in, and all of a sudden it all changes.
Is he the first choice to come in for that position, by the way?
Well, potentially not, because you've seen Martinez operate cleverly in them positions, and it could be a case of McCarthy comes back in. But I'm just saying that could happen. Morales could come in, and it could. So you never say never in football. Mm. I said at the start of the season, on the show, I said like we should have got rid of him because it looked like he checked out the end of last season. He wasn't there. I think his ego was being checked a little bit, actually, because he's always give off an aura that, well, I'll one day leave Everton for a bigger club. And he's sort of now in the position where he can't get in Everton's first team. And I think it is hurting him a little bit. I don't think he feels part of the group. I think when we won at Middlesbrough and all the celebrations were going off, he was straight down the tunnel and didn't really involve himself in all that. I don't think he really feels part of what we've got going on at the moment. And it's in the balance whether he does turn his Everton career around. I mean, we've seen Martinez with in a similar situation before the World Cup with Jelovic, who wasn't in the team, wanted to move on for his chances of getting into a World Cup squad for Croatia. And maybe if an offer comes in for Morales, he might go to Martinez and pose the same question and say, well, I want to be playing. And if it's the right price for Everton, they might maybe look at him going, because they have got Lennon as well as a backup winger. I personally think I wouldn't want to do it at this stage now. I think, especially we've been in a semi-final, like next month, it could be one of them games where we desperately need him. And
he is a game changer,
yeah,
isn't he?
Exactly. Yeah. And you sell him and you think, well, what was the point of that? You know what I mean? But it's a sticky situation, because if an offer does come in for him and he wants to go, and he's already sort of checked out, and he has got the competition on the horizon, Martinez might be inclined to sell him. It'd be interesting to see how we deal with a bid if one did come in.
So just the one thing you mentioned, that he's a game changer, and we all know he is. And that's what makes me think that the manager just doesn't trust him anymore, because we all know how good a player he is. He's always been good for a goal for Everton, but it's the penalty thing, the storming off at Middlesbrough, the way he acted at Swansea, they just the almost just added up a little bit, and Martinez might be thinking now, I can't trust this fella anymore. He's not got the right attitude for it. Because his ability, he should be able to come on and change games for us when we're chasing matches like last night. Ideally, look at the games getting stretched. A player like him would be ideal for it. But something's obviously happened. Something's obviously switched with the manager, which he doesn't fancy him anymore.
Would it fill you with regret if he was to leave? Because I think it would. Because personally, I'm a massive fan of his. I've probably more of a fan of his than I probably should be, given his antics recently, like you've explained there, Dave. The Middlesbrough thing and then the West Brom thing last season. He's always, you know, that cup game against West Ham when he come on and changed it, we ultimately nearly went through on penalties.
Well, that's how good he can be.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. And I just get the sense it filled me with regret if he left, because I think he's got that level of consistency in his game. And through no fault of Roberto Martinez's, because we know how good of a man-manager he is, or you know, with the exception of the goalkeeping situation, we know how good of a man-manager he is. I sort of think we've missed the boat a little bit with nurturing a talent like Morales, but is it just one of those situations where that's how things have worked out?
And I mean, it's not like he's had a terrible Everton career. He's been at the club a fair while. I think it was when I very first started on the show. I think we said we'd just signed him, and that was like a good like three or four seasons ago. And I think back to Moyes' last season, he was really good that season, and I remember him scoring that great goal at Tottenham away when we mounted a bit of a surge for the Champions League, didn't we, under Moyes before he got the United job. And it's not like he's not done anything at Everton. We've been quite unlucky. Do you know what I mean? In his time there, we could have done things. He's had good spells in the team, but maybe it is a case of, you know, sometimes players just need to hit reset and move on somewhere else. But I don't doubt for one minute if he goes to another Premier League club that he'd do really well for them.
Yeah. I want to move on a little bit now and talk about the defence, and Matt, you touched on a little bit earlier, the defence without Jagielka in it. Obviously, it now includes Romero Funes Mori, who for many has already developed a cult status at the club. And for me, I don't know, sometimes I look at him and I see, you know, Everton uses that phrase, don't they? It's Everton, that. And I thought it was fantastic when he scored his goal against Bournemouth. I love the passion the lad shows. He really seems to be immersed in what Everton's all about and what the club are all about and what the fans want to see. Doing examples against Palace, we'd have thought he's got that little bit of dodge in him.
You're thinking Tim Vickery might be right about this lad all along.
But hasn't Tim Vickery retracted?
I'm categorically saying I'm not going that far. Because people have thrown that right back at him. I don't understand. You know, it's gone far too much the other way in the extremes, hasn't it? Because we got him, we're thinking, hang on, we've blown £9 million on a centre-back, and this journalist comes along and tells us how poor he is, has a really good start to his Everton career, and then everyone's throwing it back at the journalist saying he's rubbish. You know, what are you saying he's rubbish for, and all this? And then yesterday he lunges in the 80-odd minute, and you're thinking, what are you doing there, lad? Why are you making that tackle? Why are you finding yourself in the left midfield slot with 5 minutes to go and we're 1-1? You know, he's a funny player, isn't he? He's got that sort of cavalier approach to that South Americans are probably renowned for.
Yeah, it's not really what you want from a centre half at times. We've got one in Stones already. Yeah. He plays it a bit like that, but I think he's had a really good start to his Everton career. He won the Player of the Month award, didn't he? I'm not entirely sure he warranted that accolade, but he had a good start. He played really well in games like the Derby. Remember, he came on against Arsenal, was really good that day. But there are moments in his game where you can just see he's still quite rough around the edges, and his clearing the ball's not very good. It seems to go off in all directions or short. His positioning at times, there was a couple of times when Palace tried to counter-attack against us last night and he just charged out of position. And in that sort of sequence of the game, you want to slow the counter-attack down, not speed it up. And making those sorts of erratic decisions did help Palace get off the pitch and put us under a little bit of pressure at times. So I'm not writing the lad off by any means. I just think that I think he probably suits playing next to someone like Jagielka more than Stones, because Stones is a defender who takes the ball, he moves it forward, he's happy to carry it out from the back, and he vacates his position quite a lot. And Mori does the same, not in the same respect as in terms he carries the ball out of the back, but he goes to try and win tackles, he's proactive, he goes to try and win headers, and that can leave space to time. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't his fault for the goal, was it? I think it was Gareth Barry who was meant to be picking up Scott Dan for that, but hopefully Jagielka, I think Jags was back in training yesterday, wasn't he, I believe? So hopefully he'll be back in the team soon, especially with some of these big games coming up.
It's funny, isn't it, Dave, because you'd encourage that approach from a defender. We don't see enough of it. Obviously, that's why Stones is such a precious entity. But, you know, that sort of cavalier approach, putting your foot on the ball, wanting to bring it out a little bit, trying to find, you know, Hollywood passes from a centre-back position.
He loves Hollywood shots as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm all for that in many ways, but the fact he's got like the lad next to him who's doing it and doing it very well, obviously we know how good John Stones is, that's probably to his detriment, isn't it? And it's almost, I almost look at them and see there's a bit of that competitive edge that you get when you're kids where you're like, anything you can do, I can do better.
Yeah. Well, I think we've just got to enjoy John Stones for as long as we can, because, I mean, just a few of the things last night, again, you're just in awe of how good he is.
That cross from his left foot was amazing.
Some big tackles. The one in the first half where he jinked past about half their team and carried the ball out of defence, and he's just so effortless. And I think maybe long term, next season, it wouldn't surprise me if our defensive partnership was Mori and Jagielka. Mm. And because if Barcelona come and call him for Stones, they're scouting him quite heavily at the moment, then I think it might be just one too much for us to hold on. We couldn't really stand in his way of that. And maybe alongside Jagielka as what would be a Stones replacement, God forbid, it wouldn't be the same, but it wouldn't be such a bad transition, do you know, like having a Mori who's had some tutorage under Stones and seeing how it can be done, and the fact that Mori's a left footer, Jagielka's a right footer, there's a natural balance there. So I'm quite happy with the money we spent on him in terms of I can't see the potential long term in him.
Yeah, I agree.
He does need polishing, and it's similarly to Galloway, who's done nothing wrong at all. But I would see Baines come back in the team as soon as Martinez thinks Baines is at full throttle and can start again. And that's not saying Galloway's done anything wrong. It's just the fact that Baines is the finished article. His game will just offer that little bit more. But in the long term, you know you've got a trusted player there in Galloway. And it's the same with Mori. Jagielka will be fit. He will come back into the team. But I think Mori will just keep getting better and better and will ultimately become a good player for Everton.
We've almost come full circle, Matt, with what we opened the show with in terms of that Fab Four that I mentioned that's getting so much publicity. It's a bit of a blanket question, this, but it's sort of the dawn of a new era on the show, so I will ask it. What do we have to do to keep hold of those four players? Is there a circumstance where all four of them stay? Because, I mean, Dave Sandon,
I don't see anyone banging the door down for Coney.
You're talking about the dawn of a new era. Dave Bennett's actually being defeatist there, saying John Stones.
Do you mean the four attackers or the spine?
I'm saying De La Feu, Stones,
okay,
Lukaku and
Barkley.
Barkley, yeah.
Yeah.
I think do we have to? I mean, obviously, we've got to go and win something to keep them together. I think is it a given? I don't know. I can't gauge a reaction for this.
If Barcelona do come in for Stones, like Dave mentioned, which I can't see them doing, to be honest, because they've got no money at the moment. They're absolutely skint. They can't even afford to sign players in January, Barcelona, because they're just so poor. But if they came in for him and said 50 million, that'd be tough to stand in the lad's way. But they're all tied down into long-term deals. We're in the semi-final of a cup. They're progressing and building as a team. Hopefully they can see a future for this team and the fact that they can achieve something with Everton. But I think what it is important that we do is that we add to that as well with other players. So whether it's signing a new goalkeeper or a new left-sided player in January, going out and spending big money on those positions in the summer, we need to build around that core of players, because if we don't, you know, players like Kone have done a good job, like you mentioned there. Howard's been a decent player for us, but they are gaping holes on the side, and we need to address them if we are going to kick on, regardless of how good those four are.
But the other thing is, it's like football moves on. Do you know what I mean? It's like we might not keep all four of them. We may not. Like Stones could go. I think he'd be the most likely of the four to go.
Interesting, because I actually think it's Lukaku. I think you look at the pedigree he's shown now. He's a 1-2 striker, which it's a massive premium now, isn't it? 50 and 100. We bought him for 28 million. He obviously wants to go but on to either, bigger, better things, whether it's with Everton or not.
Either way, deciding what the pecking order of what order out the door they're going to go. It's how you spend the money. You only got to look at Southampton. You know, they had their team pillaged by Liverpool after a really good season, and I was just thinking, oh, they're going down. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
But they pulled
out players like Tadic and Mane and Pella, and they've actually improved them from what they were. Do you know what I mean? So that obviously that's on a more scaled down version of maybe transfer fees we'd be recouping for these players as well. So it's how you use that money and how you can you make it take you on a notch. You could, because you for one sale of John Stones, you could bring in three really good assets to your team, and it's making sure you do that with the money, because we've seen it at Liverpool. You know, they had the situation of squandering big money on two occasions when they sold Torres and Suarez, and it didn't work out for them under Rodgers. That's the other side of the coin from what Southampton did. So, I mean, it is not the end of the world if you lose a player. It's just keeping the continuity going and moving you on to the next stage.
And as silly as it might sound as well, I think a lot of it will have to do with the Euros next summer as well. If someone like Lukaku goes to the European Championships, bangs in six goals for Belgium, gets them to the final. I know he doesn't really play that often for Belgium, but say if he does, or say Stones goes there, plays well, Delafay forces his way into the Spain squad, then after those, if players go there and the young players and they perform at those sorts of major championships, that's when you get the very, very top teams coming in and having a really good look at them, and maybe then you'd be worried. But they're all tied down on long-term deals. I don't see any reason why we can't keep them all at least one more season after this one. Hopefully we win something within this season, and that's the little worry for me, that if we don't win anything with them this year, we can all look back and say, wow, these young players were great and they were going in the right direction, but they didn't actually have anything tangible to show for it.
Yeah, so supplementing, it's a massive issue for me, like you've just said. Yeah. Then I think you've got to go out, and I wrote something like this when we were rebuffing all of those John Stones bids in the summer. It's okay with one hand acting like a big football club and saying, look, he's not for sale at any price, and rebuffing everything. Really refreshing to see. Bravo. You know, you take your hat off to Everton for doing that. But you know, you've got to do something with the other hand as well. You've got to balance the scales and go out, invest, and show the lad that, well, hang on, yeah, we think you're worth more than 50 odd million or whatever it is they're willing to pay. But ultimately, we haven't gone out and invested in any way, really, in terms of real quality, other than Dale Feu in the summer, and obviously Cleverly as well, who arrived on a free. Obviously, the Dale Feu thing sort of watered down that issue, hasn't it, that we didn't spend that much money, because he's been fantastic. So
yeah.
I think you've got away with one there. January will be really interesting, I think. Particularly if you have to sell to buy. I mean, that's where you're talking about horses for courses. Dave, if Morales wants off, we need money. Maybe it's best for all parties if ties are severed there.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. Especially if Martinez has a few targets in mind on where he thinks it'd be better suited throughout the squad, then that he's the manager, and that's his job. That's what he's got to do. But I think, just briefly going back to talking about these players moving on, if Everton keep moving in the direction they're going, if they get a taste of winning silverware this year, we finally win the League Cup and they do something really big, and they challenge for the Champions League, and they're on the cusp of the Champions League, the list of teams where a transfer out of Everton improves you is going smaller and smaller, isn't it? Mm. So it's getting to the Premier League's where the main money is, with the TV deals and the way it's distributed and everything. So I mean, it is getting to that stage where Everton can be sort of getting classed in an upper echelon of the teams you'd want to be playing for. So I mean, if we just got to continue this upward curvature and try and finally get over the line with a trophy, because if we do that, it just sort of people look at you that little bit differently, don't they? And the players that are there feel part of something and a part of history, and maybe would be obliged to stick around one or two more years. So that's why this League Cup's absolutely massive for us.
We're only going to cut it in about 5 minutes for our first show on the exclusive to the podcast. I want to spend that 5 minutes devoted to the big man himself, Lukaku, because his goal scoring feats are fantastic in today's game. Obviously, again, I mentioned, you know, watered down situations in the modern game. You look abroad and you see Suarez, Neymar, Ronaldo, Messi, you see those ratios, they sort of make Lukaku look a little bit superfluous, don't they? So he is top class, Matt, isn't he? And he can be world class.
Yeah, he's well on his way there, isn't he, at the moment? And there were times last season when he was looking a little bit laboured. I don't think he was fully fit at times, was there? He obviously lost his best mate in that car accident. And
just before you carry on with that, the thing that really astounds me is the fact that he's played 100 games already.
Yeah.
I think he started 93. He's played 100 matches. It only feels like yesterday we got him on loan. You know, it's the games he's actually missed. I think he got injured in the derby, didn't he, when we got battered?
Gareth Barry fell on him, didn't he?
Yeah, Gareth Barry fell on top of him. And I think that's the only time he's had a prolonged spell out. I can't remember. There was a spell, I think, as well, where he had two or three games on the bench over Christmas last year through loss of form, I think, rather than fitness. But his stamina, I mean, that's some going, isn't it? Particularly with the World Cup in the middle of it as well.
He's played every game for us this season, started every single match, all the league games, everything in the League Cup. So that just shows. We mentioned earlier about Delafeu, didn't we, becoming a 90-minute player? And when Lukaku first arrived at Everton, I remember Martinez saying that he came off the bench at West Brom, he was making impacts late in games. The next step for him was to go on and do it from the off. And now his progress this season's been outstanding. And you could see the confidence bristling in him last night. Some of the one-touch flicks he was doing to Kone, back to goal work was brilliant. Taking that shot on the volley in the second half, you know, just snapshot like that, just on pure instinct. That just shows it that he's just got that knack for scoring goals, and he's starting to score different types of goals as well, isn't he? Now you look at he's against Aston Villa, he scored the header against Borough again, another header. It's not something he's really been too good at in his Everton career in the air, but he's starting to show a lot more like that. The poacher's goal he scored against Crystal Palace last night, again, you want to see him in those sorts of areas, getting on the end of things. So he's a force of nature, isn't he, at the moment? He's looking absolutely unstoppable, and that's five games in a row now which he scored. He might be looking at Jamie Vardy's record, thinking I quite fancy a bit of that.
The thing that gets me, Dave, is, you know, modern day strikers, you're obviously judged on the surface you get largely. I mean, you look at probably Benteke, who's struggling a little bit at Liverpool, probably not getting the service to what, you know, his attributes sort of relate to. But the really, really top strikers in world football get goals regardless, and Lukaku's starting to do that. Like Matt said, it's different types of goals. It's not necessarily the service. I know De La Feu's assisted like 8 of his last 14 or whatever it is, but he's getting involved in games. He looks a £28 million player, doesn't he? He looks Everton's talisman now. When you watch Everton, you see Lukaku, it's all about him. And that's what world-class players do. He's very much in that mould, isn't he, where you see, you know, I'm not comparing him to these, so don't call me crazy if you listen to this, but, you know, you look at Messi, you look at Ronaldo, they're not one-man teams, but they're the ones that epitomise their football clubs, and they can score from nowhere. I think Lukaku's starting to get towards that now. He can score so many different types of goals. He's, like Matt said, comes outside the box, links up play so well. He's very alert. His heading game's starting to get a lot better. I mean, this is every bit the play that we wanted.
Yeah, it is. I'd sort of disagree in terms of, like, I think it is a lot about the service. And what I said earlier in the show about he's got them three players behind that he's got good rapport with in different ways. I wouldn't say he's a goal from nowhere type of person where he'll go and get the ball on the halfway line and dance past 10 players and score. He doesn't do that. But what he does do is his game's multifaceted, so he can link up with in different ways. I mean, he's got Delafeu there who can put a cross on his head and he can head it in and he can do good first time finishes off the service Delafeu whips into him. When he does go out and get involved outside the box, Barkley's always near him. So often you see them playing like double 1-2s, him and Barkley. And Kone's helped him out no end. I mean, Kone's sort of a bit of an unsung hero in it all, because he's playing on the left, but he's got striker's instinct, so he's getting in the box. And it's not the case where Lukaku's in there by himself like last season and he's just crowded out by defenders. Because Kone's in there occupying defenders as well, it's freeing up space for Lukaku. And again, them two, when they are in and around each other, they sort of seem to be on a wavelength of where the other one's going to be, and that's worked well. And I think that's why you're seeing such a good Romelu Lukaku right now. It's because Everton fits him so well right now with the players we've got. And that's the question he'd have to ask himself. If he started getting in ideas of, I fancy a move now and a to go up to a higher level. It doesn't necessarily work out that way. There'd be a lot more pressure on him if he went to it. Say, for instance, someone who's struggling for goals now, Man United. If Man United paid £50 million for Lukaku now and he went in there, they would expect him to click straight away and be scoring goals. And I can't say convincingly that he would because of the way he'd need time to bed into Man United and how and build up rapport and the way that they play at the moment wouldn't necessarily suit his game. So sometimes a player needs to be careful in what they wish for, and maybe he's starting to realise that because he's always been a player that goes away on international duty and he talks up things, but maybe he should realise how good he has it at Everton right now. And that's not just because of how good a player he is, it's because of how good Everton fits him as a player. So it's a two-way street.
And what's encouraging, just last week,
no rush, mate. We're on a podcast now. Say whatever you want.
In fact, hang on. We should say the only reason we are in a rush was Dave Bennett's got other media duties.
But there's still a lot of areas he can improve as well, which is encouraging. And you think the goals he's getting now with the attributes he's got, there's still his work. He can still get a little bit better. His hold up play, even though it's improving, can still get a little bit better. His awareness in games can still improve. So if he just makes little further strides in all those areas of his game, then he is going to be getting close to those, you know, 75 and 100 sort of marks, maybe even a little bit more. And you mentioned there about how he's not a player who creates stuff out of nothing necessarily, but I think he has started to add that to his game a little bit this season. You think about the West Brom game away, when he did that little turn, played in Kone, the chances he had last night when
hit the post first time, yeah, that's purely instinctive.
He spun it and hit the post, and then again in the second half, just snapshot on the volley. That cross he did for Kone against Sunderland at the outside of his foot was just unbelievable. You know, that's something you never would have even thought about trying last season. So
he's improved the fundamentals as well, hasn't he? Yeah. That's the main thing. One of the things he got criticised most last season for was his first touch. That seems, although we had a couple of bad ones last night, remember one that went up over his head, but more often than not now, he's trapping the ball better, isn't he? Mm. He's bringing people into play better. So, but we all thought that would happen because we always go back to how young he is. Yeah. You forget how young he is. You think he's like touching towards 30 for the specimen he is and how long he's been on the scene. But he's a really young lad, and we did say all that will improve, and thankfully it has been.
Right, we've come to the end of this show. Don't be fooled by the fact that it's probably the same amount of time that we take on a standard Tuesday night. I assure you they will get longer, and some of them will get shorter as well when either we've played awful or we can't be bothered talking about it. That's the beauty of
international breaks,
definitely. We'll try to do something special for them rather than bore you with talk about England and all that. But I know Ped loves it, so it's ultimately his decision. Just to recap on what you can do to listen to us in future, I know Android users always getting on at me that it's on iTunes and things like that. It will be on Audioboom, which is available on all formats. I'm reliably informed by people at the station. We guarantee every single show will be uploaded by 6 o'clock on Tuesday night, so it's just pretty much like listening to us as normal, without the adverts as well, if you've been listening to us on radio, so, you know, every cloud and all that. Twitter, at the Blue Room EFC, all the information will be on there tonight. Obviously, follow Ped, Dave, myself, Matt. Matt. I've got a computer block of Matt's head here, so that's why I keep forgetting he's there. Weekly basis, maybe even more as well. We don't know where this goes. You get the minimum of one show a week. Obviously, if there's a major talking point, if heaven forbid Joe Robles gets the first team nod ahead of Tim Howard on a consistent basis, we might do an emergency show and wax lyrical about Joel for 2 hours. That's how far this could go. Anyway, thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for listening. We're not going anywhere. And if you do want to get a fix of us on the radio, join Steve Hoddersall on the kickoff on Thursday morning, 7 o'clock, Radio City Talk. And we'll be back same time next week. The Blue Room, Radio City Talk.